This is Film Survival, the podcast. I'm Eva Zimson. What is this podcast about? It's about how to survive and thrive in a creative career. It's about what it takes to actually make it in this industry. It's the war stories. It's filmmakers talking about their careers and how they got where they are. It's about pounding the pavement and learning to love that process. In this episode, you'll see that sometimes you need to get creative, really creative, to achieve your goals. This is how to turn an obstacle into an opportunity. In other words, no means yes, or rejection is an invitation to be creative. As a filmmaker, one of the statements or mantras that I think is most useful is an obstacle is an opportunity. This I learned from the person who I consider my filmmaker mentor from afar, whether he knows it or not. That is Lars von Trier. And he made a film called The Five Obstructions with his mentor, Jorgen Leth, who made a film called The Perfect Human many years ago. And The Five Obstructions was a film about Lars daring Jorgen to remake that film, but each time with a set of obstructions. And one of the obstructions was actually, okay, so no shot can be longer than 12 frames. Now, seeing how, you know, film is 24 seconds per frame. Oh, correction, 24 frames per second, that is. That's challenging. That's almost impossible. That seemingly is not doable. And when I was watching the film and I heard him put that rule out, I thought, okay, this is a joke. This is not going to end well. And then, oh, he threw in another rule, which was you have to shoot it in Cuba. And so he went with a bunch of obstructions for the first one. And he ended up coming up with something so beautiful and brilliant. It was something that you couldn't even fathom is possible. And yet it was created because of the obstruction. This blew my mind. And I thought, we all have to think this way. If you think of an obstacle as an opportunity, then you will always make something better than you actually originally thought you would make. I was in London doing my master's in feature film and relatively close to Denmark, and I decided I'm going to just call up Lars von Trier's people and ask for an interview. And so I did. I was in the little dingy computer lab of our cohort, and they basically put me in touch with his assistant, Thomas, and, you know, I gave him my little intro spiel, and he said, you know, unfortunately, you cannot interview him. Lars does not do interviews of this nature. In fact, he's already done all of his interviews for Dogville. He won't be here. He'll be at his cottage writing. So, you know, don't bother. And absolutely not. And so I said, okay, just please remember my name. And we hung up. And there was actually one of my classmates in the room. And she said, so what do they say? And they said, no. And they're like, oh, you know, and I said, yeah, I'm going. That just means they want me to come. I consider this an invitation. And she just looked at me like, you're absolutely crazy. And most people actually thought that I was a little crazy for doing this. But, you know, I flew to Sweden where I had friends and stayed with them. And then decided I was going to just show up at Zentropa, which is Lars von Trier's studio. And it was November. And I remember seeing my Swedish friends who I hadn't seen in a while. And that morning, you know, it was rainy and dreary. And all I really wanted to do is stay at her place and eat cinnamon buns all day and hibernate. So I went to Denmark, by a train from Sweden from my friend's house. She dropped me off at the train station. And actually, I didn't even know entirely how to get to their studio. And I remember calling ahead of time and saying, you know, oh, I have to drop off a package. I was sort of impersonating a courier. And they gave me sort of enough instruction to get me by. And so I went to the train station, got off.
Do you know if this is the way to Saint-Tropez? Okay. How much more?
Sorry.
How much more? Do you know?
Like 7 kilometers. Go down to the road here.
Yeah.
Turn to the right. You go like 2 blocks, and then in the there's kind of in a yard.
Yeah.
You can see this Saint-Tropez, it says.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Lars's studio is in an army base, a former army base, and so I had to walk about in a kilometer and a half or so from the station, and I ended up getting a lot of instructions on how to get there. And finally I get there, and as I'm entering the premises, some guys, they turn to me and they're like, do you have permission to film? And I say, I think because that's what you do as a documentary filmmaker. You just forge ahead and hopefully everything goes well. You hope for the best. And you sometimes have to do very uncomfortable things. So I walked in Michael Moore style. I had wires coming off me. It was just me. I had no cameraman. I had, thank goodness, like an onboard mic. And I went inside. And I marched right up to the front desk. And keep in mind, it's an old army base, and Lars's studio is not typical of any kind of corporate look. It's this, it almost, there were like ping pong tables in the lobby. There was a drum kit. It was a bit hodgepodge. And so I go up to the secretary, and she covers her face with a piece of paper, and I'm filming, and my camera's fogging up. I'm actually too nervous to even notice that. And I'm just filming. And so I say,
Is this Saint-Tropez?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering if I could speak with Thomas Schindel. I spoke with him on the phone before.
About what?
To talk to Lars von Trier.
What's your name?
Eva, from Canada.
And just at that moment, Thomas walks in, and I like spin around with my camera, and then he looks at me, and I reintroduce myself, and I said, do you remember me from the phone? And he's like, yes, I remember you. And I said, yeah, so I'm here, I came. And then we're talking, and just at that moment I see Lars in a golf cart painted in camouflage color, like an army truck, but it's a golf cart. And he's speeding away because he sees me with a camera, and he thinks, oh God, here's another press member unannounced. I want to get out of here. But this was like a moment of euphoria for me, because I then knew that Lars was there that day. And that was my big fear, that he was actually serious, that he would be at his cottage. I had to wait around for 3 hours because I guess they were obviously doing things. And I spent a lot of time using their latte machine, which was a beautiful device. And I looked at their wall of fame, which was so cool. It was just this grid that had the Palme d'Or wired to it. And props from his films were attached to this thing. And just there were hundreds of awards everywhere, but they were so displayed in such a way that didn't make you feel like he was in any way arrogant or full of himself at all. While waiting, there was a guy in a red sweater, and he started playing the drum kit, and I started to film him, and he was pretty funny. He was very comedic in a way, like he kept looking up at the camera and playing his drums. And later I found out that he was the CEO of the company. I mean, he is the big producer, Peter Albeck Jensen, who is probably one of the biggest mogul producers in Europe, and he was playing the drum kit, and I ended up using his music for the entire score of the film. And later, when I ended up making the film, he told me that I was the first to give him his IMDb credit as composer. And, you know, he has about 100 credits as producer. And he said that his first dream in life always was to be a rock star. So I kind of helped him achieve his real dream, which was funny. You know, at this point, I think I went to the bathroom. You know, I had a lot of lattes. And I came back from the bathroom, and suddenly I see Thomas walking towards me. And Lars walks up to me. And I, you know, this is a big moment of first meeting him. And I just shake his hand and I say, thank you so much for agreeing to this. So right before that, Thomas said, you know, he's going to do the interview. And then Lars said, you know, agreeing to what? So we get in the room, and this was, I think, Peter's office, and it had a huge communist flag on the wall, like a giant red flag. And Lars, you know, said, "What? Where do you want me?" And I said, "What? You're Lars von Trier. Why don't you decide?" And so he sat right in front of the flag, and that flag presented problems later, and I had to use some color correction. But so he sat down, and I had to, you know, act very quickly. I thank God I had two microphones, because one of them failed and the one that was on him didn't, so that was great. I had all the audio, and we just started the interview, and I had five questions, and the first one was, what's the most important aspect of filmmaking?
I think the most important thing, and this might sound extremely banal, but that it comes from within instead of from, you know, the outside. You know, all this, we have a big discussion about it here, if you should use script writers, you know, but whenever, if somebody has an idea and you put a lot of stuff on from the outside, you know, from producers or script writers, it only makes it more superficial. It's very important that it's something you know about and something that you care about. And yeah, I'm sorry, it is. Yes, I think that's true. Oh, I know, because even though, you know, whenever two people come together and they, then it's kind of the things they can agree on is, of course, only half of what one person. And then the more people, you know, the less comes out of it. And the more you're trying to make it understandable for everybody, the less interesting it is for everybody. So I believe in much more specialized films and much more personal films, much, much more.
You know, since I've made the film and put it out there, some people say, you know, he didn't really say anything new. But I feel that Lars said so many fundamental things. You know, he said all of the things that I needed to hear at the time, because I was in a program that was really encouraging, you know, the audience, like, you have to make a film that is appealing to an audience. And he was saying, you know, you have to write a story that's personal. I was writing a story where I was the main character of the film. And he was just so, he reaffirmed everything that I was sort of questioning as a result of trying to be more commercial. And I think that's what Lars von Trier is known for. He is not commercially driven at all. He's very much story-driven, and he makes stories that he wants to make, and he doesn't care, you know, what anybody thinks, for better or for worse, you know? And that is ultimately what I like about him. And so he was very generous with his answers, and I should mention that on my camera I had a little label. I put a little slogan above the record light, like, to cover the record light, and it said, "Tell the truth." And he noticed it when he sat down, and he kind of pointed to it and just nodded again. And, you know, I asked him a few other questions about, you know, probing him about, for example, what we should do in Canada with regard to English Canadian cinema, and can we do something like Dogma to help our industry, because French Canada has such a strong film industry and identity, and sometimes English Canada suffers a little bit. And he really acknowledged that language is the thing that, you know, protects certain cinemas, including Danish cinema. And he was then started to talk about dogma as well in general, which was really nice because before the interview, I had watched every interview ever done with him, and I noticed that he wasn't that nice in many interviews. He would start to ask the interviewer, you know, his religion or something, and not really take it seriously. And I think part of it is that people would actually ask Lars von Trier, like, what is dogma? And you really don't do that. You shouldn't do that. So I think if anybody wants to try this, you really have to know who you're dealing with. You have to know that filmmaker inside and out, and then you have to come up with an approach that they will value, that they will see as an understanding of them. And if you can do that, then I think you can get to anybody. But I think it takes true time in the research of getting to know them. And for me, that was watching every film he ever made, genuinely loving the work, and also watching and reading any interview ever done with him before. So it was like a mini thesis project, I guess. And by the end, so I got the interview, it was 15 minutes, and then he left, and I gave him like a one-line pitch of my feature that I was writing, and he said, sounds great, show it to me when it's done. And what's funny is his company later became interested in co-producing it. And just that was the best, one of the best moments of my life. And certainly in my filmmaking career, it was such a high point. And that later that night, you know, they actually asked me to stay around, and I did. And we played ping pong and ate candy, and they drink beer on Friday nights. So like, that's what they do at the studio at Zentropa, I guess, to do company bonding. And by the end of the night, I ended up walking home, and along the little path towards the train station, and it was dark, and I've never felt that happy before. I mean, I was euphoric. I couldn't believe it. I met Lars von Trier, and I had that on tape, and, you know, this was I didn't even know if I was going to turn it into a film. I never intended that. I just wanted to do it, and I did it, and I had, you know, a picture of him and I, and yeah, and then I went back to Sweden. My friend picked me up, and I just put up my arms in the air, and I said, I did it. And they all couldn't believe it. So I'd like to thank you for listening. On the next episode of Film Survival, we're going to talk about mentorship. You can find more information on episodes, workshops, and private consulting at filmsurvival.com. Let's keep the conversation going. Follow us on Twitter at Film Survival.